Years ago, it seemed like every time God's people would assemble in a fairly large group anyway, you could walk by, and there was a good possibility that you would hear something said about, quote, the place of safety, end quote. But as the years have gone on, it seems like extremely little is said about a place of safety. You hardly ever even hear the term. And many of you that are, quote, newer in the faith probably have never really even heard the term unless some member or something just happened to say something. We've had a lot of speculation through the years about where the place of safety is. I know a minister that says that the place of safety is going to be in Canada. And I'm not sure where in Canada, but anyway, it's going to be in Canada. My senior class president, when I was a senior and ambassador, went to Utah and formed a commune and demanded that everybody sell their farm or their house and all of their property and give to him, and then he would distribute, quote, equally among the people, and the people that were there were assured that that was going to be the place of safety. Other ministers have speculated and said that, well, it's just a place where you're going to be, no matter where it is, God will protect you, and that is going to be your place of safety. And it's not a particular, no specific place, but wherever you are, whether that's hiding in a cave or you're out in a field in a ditch or whatever, that God's people will be protected there. Well, today I want to go through the subject of a place of safety. The who, the what, the why, the where, the when, and the how. Let's explore the idea if there is a place of safety for an end-time Christian. Does the Bible state where it might be, or if it is, or again, or you just staying in your home and God's going to protect you there, which certainly he can do. But what does the Bible say? What can you prove from the Bible? And what can you not prove from the Bible? And what is the most important aspect of a, quote, place of safety and understanding the subject? First of all, why must there be a place of safety? The Bible makes it very clear that in this end time that calamity is going to strike the earth, that overwhelming problems are going to be here upon all the nations at the very end of this age. And at this period of time, right before the coming of Jesus Christ, I think is unique in history. You can't help but turn on the 6 o'clock news and you're just appalled at all of the murder, all of the pillage, all of the problems that are going on in this world. The war that's going on now in Israel and the problems around the world that it just seems unanswerable and unsolvable. It's certainly difficult for us, I think, as we sit here, to really comprehend the time of unparalleled problems that Jesus Christ prophesied would be here. We could go through the four horsemen of the apocalypse. We could go through the seven seals that are opened and how that a third of the mankind is killed, a third of the sea and so forth is wiped out, and another third is put into captivity. We could go through the fifth seal about the martyrdom of saints. We could go through and talk about how people felt like they would rather be dead. We could go through the seventh seal, which is the seven trumpet plagues, which contain the three woes. And by the time you go through all of that, it's like wham, 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 one thing after another that's going to strike this world and strike our nation. And I think we're going to be reeling like a drunken soldier or sailor. that it's going to be such a shock that we don't really begin to comprehend it. In Revelation, the 9th chapter and verse 4, Revelation 9 and verse 4 through 7, and they were commanded not to harm the grass. Well, if we'd have gone through the seals, you would have seen where the grass was destroyed, basically. Or any green thing or any tree, but only those men who did not have the seal of God in their forehead. And we'll go through Ezekiel later and talk about that. And they were not given authority to kill them, but to torment them for 5 months. When I was at Ambassador College, one of the first people I ever met was John Halford. And of course, John's problem was he was born in England, but we won't get into that for Helena's sake. And I introduced myself, I stuck out my hand, and I said, "Hi, I'm Bill Cowan." All of you understood that. And he said, "Bail?" I said, "No, I'm Bill Cowan." And he said, "Bail? Your name is Bail?" And so from then on, every time I saw John, he'd say, "Hey, hail, Bail." And so I had to put up with him for that. But here, people are tormented in mind, in heart, and in spirit. It reminds me of what I understand someone that is stung by a scorpion, that it doesn't kill most people. It will kill some, but most live through it. But they are so sick and so ill that they literally wish they could die to get out of their misery. And it mentions that here. It says their torment is like the torment of a scorpion when it strikes man, that they don't die, but they wish like they wish that they could. And in those days, men will seek death and will not find it. They will desire to die, but death will flee from them. And I think it's going to be worse to survive than to die. In Matthew 24, in verse 21 and 22, we're very familiar with the words of Jesus Christ here, and he said, "For there shall be great tribulation, such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time, no, nor ever shall be. And unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened." It's hard to go back in history and to think about the mass murderers, to think about people like Idi Amin in recent history, to think about Hitler, to think about Attila the Hun, some of the pillaging of the Vikings and different ones that would just go through and rape and rob and murder everywhere they went. And then Christ said that that was nothing, nothing in comparison to the tribulation that is coming, I believe, not only in our lifetime, but in a short while. He said there's never been anything in the history of this world that is going to be that horrible as that is coming. You know, we sit here and I honestly think that it is really impossible for us, as we sit here in your beautiful dresses, your nice suits, and sitting in air conditioning with a fan behind me feels good, but it's hard to comprehend the words of Jesus Christ when he said there's never, ever, since the world began, never has there been such suffering and traumatic events that are going to take place, apparently, in our lifetime. And he said in verse 22, unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved. Now, I'm not a nuclear physicist, but my understanding, limited understanding, of an atomic bomb is that it can only be made basically one size. You don't make it bigger, you don't make it smaller. Now, they have been able to figure out how to make a dirty bomb, it's called, that you can put in a backpack, and it gives out all its radiation and everything for a few square blocks or miles, and can kill people indiscriminately. But as far as an atomic bomb, it's certainly not as powerful as a hydrogen bomb. As a matter of fact, an atomic bomb is used to set off a hydrogen bomb. A hydrogen bomb starts out 1,000 times more powerful than an atomic bomb. Unlike an atomic bomb, a hydrogen bomb can theoretically be made as powerful as you want it to be. Once it reaches a certain level, it is called a cobalt bomb. One cobalt bomb has the capability of destroying all life on this planet. One. They have it on paper. I wouldn't doubt if some idiot doesn't have it made. But they could make it just as simple as could be. And all it would take is the push of one button. There would be no amoeba. There would be no fish in the oceans. There would be no starfish on the bottom of the oceans. There would be no plant life. There would be no single cell anything. There would be no human life on the planet. One cobalt bomb could destroy all life on this planet. And I wouldn't doubt if Jesus Christ doesn't, or God doesn't, put off the return of Christ until that button is pushed and it's in the air and Christ grabs it out of the air, because if he came any sooner, mankind would stick their fist up to God and say, well, why did you intervene? We were going to elect so-and-so, and so-and-so was going to solve all of our problems. He was going to end hunger. He was going to bring all of the world together if you would have just kept your big nose out of our business. But Christ is going to intervene at the last split second, or no one would be left alive, and perhaps nothing would have been left alive on this earth. The very existence of mankind is in jeopardy as we sit here today. In Isaiah 26 and verse 20 through 21, it says, come, my people, enter your chambers and shut your doors behind you. Hide yourself, as it were, for a little moment until the indignation is past. For behold, the Lord comes out of his place to punish the inhabitants of the earth for their iniquity. And the earth will also disclose her blood, and will no more cover her slain. God's going to hide his people, as it says here. Now, this, I think, is the main scripture that people use to think that you're going to be protected in your home, because it says, you know, hide or enter your chambers and shut your doors behind you. But a chamber is a place that God is going to choose for us, I believe. What is a place of safety? That's why we have to have it. We have to be protected from that horrible thing that is coming, the Great Tribulation. What is a place of safety? In Psalm 91, in verses 1 through 12, we find that it is God who provides the safety, who provides the protection for us. Psalm 91 in verses 1 through 12. Who dwells in the sacred place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say to the Lord, he is my refuge and my fortress. My God, in him will I trust. Surely he shall deliver you from the snare of the fowler and from the pernicious pestilence. He shall cover you with his feathers, and under his wings you shall take refuge. In other words, depicting that just like a chicken or a bird will protect their young underneath their wings, that God is going to protect us and shield us. And under his wings you shall take refuge. His truth shall be your shield and buckler. You shall not be afraid of terror by night. Well, it's hard not to be afraid of terror if you turn on and again watch the news. It's just very, very sad and frightening. His truth shall be your shield and your buckler. And you shall not be afraid of terror by night, nor of the arrows that fly by day, nor of the pestilence that walks in darkness, chemical warfare, horrible diseases that are going to be spread about, nor of the destruction that lays waste at noonday. 1,000 may fall at your side and 10,000 at your right hand, but it shall not come near you. Only with your eyes shall you look and see the reward of the wicked. Because you have made the Lord, who is my refuge, even the Most High, your dwelling place. No evil shall befall you, nor shall any plague come near you, or near your dwellings. For he shall give his angels charge over you, and keep you in all ways, and in their hands they shall bear you up, lest you dash your foot against a stone. And of course, in Luke 4 and Matthew 4, Satan the devil quotes this to Jesus Christ as he tells him to jump off of the pinnacle. And he said, and you know, the angels will swoop down and pick you up and spare you if you would do so. And of course, that was a lie, because if Christ would have jumped, he would have died as a human being. And he told Satan, he said, you shall not tempt the Lord your God. If he'd have fallen off, absolutely, the angels would have swooped down and picked him up. But if he deliberately just jumped, then he would have been dead. But the concept of a place of safety, does it actually talk about a physical location somewhere on earth that God has specifically set aside for the purpose of protecting his people from the warfare, from the plagues and the pestilence and the woes at the end time? Notice Revelation 12 and verse 6. Revelation 12 and verse 6. Then the woman fled, and of course the woman is God's church. Then the woman fled into the wilderness, when she had a place prepared by God. So this was talking about a specific place in the wilderness that God has prepared. And they shall feed her there 1,260 days. So she has, quote, a place that is prepared by God. Notice verse 13 through 16. Now when the dragon, Satan, saw that he had been cast to the earth, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child, which of course is Jesus Christ. But the woman was given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness to her place, where she is nourished for a time, times, plural, and half a time, or three and a half times, from the presence of the serpent. So the serpent spewed water out of his mouth like a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away by the flood. But the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon had spewed out of his mouth. In other words, showing supernatural protection. I do not believe this is referring to actually a flood of water. It could be. But I think it's a symbolic language of a flood of an army, of a military force that is sent to try to kill and destroy God's people in the wilderness. Notice Psalm 29 and verse 10. Psalm 29 and verse 10. It says, the Lord sat enthroned at the flood, and the Lord sets his king forever. Again, this is not referring to Christ setting as king of kings over a body of water. It's talking about an army. It's talking about nations that he rules over. A king rules over subjects. He rules over nations. And he's going to conquer them. In Jeremiah 46 and verses 7 and 8. Jeremiah 46 and verses 7 and 8. Says, who is this coming up like a flood, whose waters move like the rivers? Egypt rises up like a flood, and its waters move like the rivers. And he says, I will go up and cover the earth, and I will destroy the city and its inhabitants. So this is referring to Egypt here, and it's like an army. He's going to come up and cover a nation and try to destroy its inhabitants, to destroy the city. Where is the place of safety? The $64,000 question. Where is the place of safety? Matthew 24 and verses 15 through 22. Matthew 24 and verse 15. He said, "Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place," he said, "whosoever reads, let him understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee unto the mountains." So it's somewhere around near Judea, apparently, because he told them to flee to the mountains. "And let him who is on the housetop not go down to take anything out of his house. And let him who is in the field not go back to get his clothes." In other words, it's going to be a time of urgency. It's going to be a time of immediate reaction. You're not going to be able to go in and prepare like you do for the Feast of Tabernacles and carry 47 suitcases with you and put the kitchen sink on the top of the car. It's just not going to happen. He said you're going to have to leave immediately, at least in that area. "But woe to those who are pregnant and those who are nursing babies in those days." Because that's going to be tough. It's going to be rough. "And pray that your flight be not in the winter," because again, that would be difficult. That would be hard. "Or on the Sabbath," because you're going to have to make some decisions. And again, it would be very, very difficult. You might violate your conscience or something. And what would you do? I wonder really how many of us follow the direct command of God, and we pray that our flight not be in the winter and that our flight not be on the Sabbath day. Verse 21, Matthew 24. "For then there will be great tribulation," as we read about earlier, "such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time, no, nor ever shall be. And unless those days should be shortened, no flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened." So he said, when you see the abomination of desolation take place, then they were to flee into the mountains. And Revelation 12 and verse 14. Revelation 12 and verse 14. "But to the woman," again God's church, "but to the woman was given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness to her place where she is nourished for a time, times and half a time from the presence of the serpent." This two wings of a great eagle, is that American Airlines? I don't know. I'll talk about that a little bit later. Daniel the 11th chapter in verse 40 through 45. Because the point there was that she's going to be protected in the wilderness for this time, times, and half a time, or three and a half times. Daniel 11 and verse 40 through 45. "And at the time of the end," which we live in, "the king of the south shall attack him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots, horsemen, and with many ships, and he shall enter the countries and overwhelm them and pass through." It's just like a tornado would go through and destroy everything in his path. Verse 41, "He shall also enter the glorious land," or the what we term the Holy Land, the Middle East, "and many countries will be overthrown, but these shall escape from his hand." And he lists three different nationalities here that at least some of them are going to escape, and that is Edom, Moab, and the predominant people of Ammon. "And he shall stretch out his hand against the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. He shall have power over the treasuries of gold and silver, and over all of the precious things of Egypt. Also the Libyans and Ethiopians shall follow at his heels. But news from the east and the north," so the northeast, something going on, "that troubles him. And they And then he shall go out with great fury to destroy and annihilate many. And he shall plant the tents of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain, Jerusalem. And yet he shall come to his end, and no one will help him. So there's going to be a widespread military conflict and conquest and conquering in the Middle East. Some nations, three in particular that he mentions, will escape: Edom, Moab, and Ammon. Now notice Isaiah 16 and verses 1 through 5. Isaiah 16 and verse 1 through 5. Send the lamb to the ruler of the land. The expression "send a lamb" means send a gift. In other words, that he's showing here, you better make appeasement with this person, you better be friends with them. And so he said, you send a gift to the ruler of the land, from Selah to the wilderness. And so again, we find a reference here to the wilderness, to the mount of the daughters of Zion. Nearly every case in the Bible, both in the Old Testament and the New Testament, when Zion is mentioned, it is a reference to God's church, to God's people. For it shall be as a wandering bird thrown out of the nest, and so shall the daughters of Moab at the fords of Arum take counsel and execute judgment. Make your shadow like the night in the middle of the day. In other words, that they're trying to hide and not stick out. Hide the outcasts, who in this case are God's people. Do not betray him who escapes. So he warns Moab that they have to hide God's people, and they better not betray them. Let my outcast dwell with you. In verse 4, O Moab, and be a shelter to them from the face of the spoiler, who is the beast power. For the extortioner is at an end. Devastation ceases. The oppressors are consumed out of the land. In mercy the throne will be established. And of course that's referring to Jesus Christ establishing God's kingdom on this earth. And one God, or Christ, will set on it in truth in the tabernacle of David, judging and seeking justice and hastening righteousness. So he said, from Selah to the wilderness. Selah is a reference specifically to a city south of the Dead Sea in the Jordan Rift Valley. Selah is a Hebrew word that means a cliff, a crag, a rock, or rugged fortress, literally translated as rock city, not the one that we know up here on the mountain, but it means rock city. So it has virtually the same identical meaning as the Greek word Petra. In Isaiah 16, continuing in verse 2, or going back to verse 2, it says, the daughters of Moab refer to the people living in the modern-day nation of Jordan. They're trying to escape from the massive armies that they see are heading in their direction, and the kings of the east are coming toward the Middle East fast, and the king of the north has already come against the king of the south. In Revelation 9 and verse 15 and 16, Revelation 9 and verses 15 and 16, so the four angels who had prepared for the hour and day and month and year were released to kill a third of mankind. Now the number of the army of the horsemen was 200 million. So here's an army of 200 million soldiers. Combined, if I'm not mistaken, in World War II, we had roughly, with all of the allies, all of the nations that fought with us, a little under 25 million people or soldiers in the army. Here, they're going to have an army of 200 million. Is this referring to an Asian bloc army from China? Is it referring to Muslims? There's approximately 2.5 billion Muslims, and no matter what the age, from little kids on up, they are willing to give their life for their cause. In Daniel, the 11th chapter, Daniel 11, and verse 40 on through chapter 12 and verse 2. Daniel 11 and verse 40. At the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind with chariots and horsemen, as we read earlier, and with many ships. And he shall enter the countries and overwhelm them and pass through. And he will also enter the glorious land, the holy land, the Middle East, and many countries shall be overthrown. But these shall escape from his hand, Edom, Moab, and the predominant people of Ammon. He shall stretch out his hand against the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. And he will have power over the treasuries of gold and silver, and all over all the precious things of Egypt. Also the Libyans and Ethiopians shall follow at his heels. But news from the east and the north shall trouble him. Therefore he shall go out with great fury to destroy and to annihilate many. And he shall plant the tents of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain. And yet he shall come to his end, and no one will help him. Then in going right on in context in chapter 12 and verse 1. At that time, Michael, the archangel Michael, shall stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people. So apparently it is Michael who has responsibility to protect God's people, to protect God's church. And there shall be a time of trouble, such as, just like Christ said, such as never was since there was a nation, even to that time. And at that time, your people, God's church, shall be delivered, everyone who is found written in the book of life. And many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, and some to shame and everlasting contempt. Is God saying, in effect, basically, that, all right, I will allow your daughters of Moab to escape to Selah, or Selah, which means the rock, but don't betray my people, his outcast, who were already there and protected. So he allows them to come in, but they'd better not betray God's people. Now, where could this Selah or Selah be? For years and years, we thought and preached and taught and believed that it was Petra. I grew up saying Petra in the South, so I should have known that that was probably wrong. But anyway, over there, they do pronounce it Petra, not Petra. And there are a lot of rock cities. You know, we got one right up here, but nothing like what I'm talking about, but there's no city in the rocks, as it were, as famous as Petra truly is. That is the number one tourist site in Jordan. Betty and I have had the opportunity, and some of you have had the opportunity to go there, and it's quite something to behold. It really is. It's located in the Jordan Rift Valley, extending south of the Dead Sea, about halfway to the Gulf of Aqaba. The entrance to the city is through what is called the Sikh, S-I-Q. It's an extremely narrow canyon that just towers up. I'm not sure how high it is, but it just goes way up, and at times it narrows down. Well, it's wider than that. You can get a horse through it, but barely. That's about the extent of it. Two people can walk side by side through it, but you when you come to some places, you kind of have to squeegee a little bit to be able to get through. And so it'd be extremely difficult for a, quote, army to come through there. It has remarkable architecture. I have a slide presentation that I put together that I'm going to show after the service today, if you'd like to watch it. I think it's real interesting as far as the sights, the color, some of the architecture and so forth. Remarkable, that has endured for hundreds and hundreds of years and is made out of sandstone. They have an amphitheater. They had a high place of worship, places for sacrifice. They have tombs. There are thousands and thousands of caves in Petra. If by chance that is a place of safety, it's going to be tough. It is so hot, so dry, that it's just, it's miserable. I mean, of course, you know me, thankfully I don't sweat much, so, but when we were there, I mean, it's just hard to breathe. It's just hot. It is hot and sandy and dusty and hard. Sleeping in a cave is not the ideal situation. At least it's a little bit cooler in there. When is the place of safety in effect? In Zephaniah, the second chapter, verses 1 through 3. Zephaniah 2 and verse 1. I'll give you a moment to find Zephaniah. We don't usually turn there every Sabbath. Zephaniah 2 and verses 1 through 3. Gather yourselves together. Yes, gather together, O undesirable nation, before the decree is issued or the day passes like chaff, before the Lord's fierce anger comes upon you, before the day of the Lord's anger comes upon you. Seek the Lord, all you meek of the earth. Who are the meek of the earth? The meek of the earth are those that are going to inherit the earth, those who are Christians, who have upheld his justice. Those that have kept God's laws, those that serve God and worship God and love him and appreciate his justice. Seek righteousness, seek humility. It may be that you will be hidden in the day of the Lord's anger. So he throws this little tidbit out there and he says, during God's anger, it might just come about that those people are going to be the ones that are, quote, hidden, are protected. It's during the 3.5 years of tribulation. It's the same time that the two witnesses will be witnessing in Jerusalem. It is the same time that the captivity is going on in the Israelitish nations around the world. It is a period, as you find in Revelation 11 and verse 2, that lasts 42 months, or 3.5 years. In Revelation 11 and verse 3, it talks about 1260 days, which is 3.5 years when you use 360 in a prophetic days in a prophetic year, not 365. But a prophetic year has 360 days in it. Also in Revelation 12 and verse 14, it talks about 3.5 times. So 42 months, 1260 days, and 3.5 times all equal the same period and the same time, which is 3.5 years. So it's during the 3.5 year tribulation when the two witnesses will witness and then be killed. Same time the captivity is going on, and God's people then will be protected in a place of safety. How will the people get to and prepare for the place of safety and be provided for? In Revelation 12 and verse 14, we read earlier that they're going to be given two wings of a great eagle. What does that mean? Like I said, does that mean American Airlines or Delta or something like this? In Exodus 19 and verse 4, It says the children of Israel were brought out on eagle's wings, and they walked. So I don't know, you know, God will get us there, whatever it takes, one way or the other. But anyway, our mode of transportation is, quote, eagle's wings, so I'm not sure how to be there. And of course, Christ said, pray that your flight not be on the Sabbath or in the winter, that you are to pray that. Will God provide, or is it going to be human effort? In Luke 17, in verse 34 through 37, Luke 17 and verse 34. I tell you, in that night there will be two men, one in bed, and one will be taken, and the other will be left. Two women will be grinding together, the one will be taken, and the other left. Two men will be in the field, the one will be taken, and the other left. And they answered and said unto him, where, Lord, where are they taken? And so he said unto them, wherever the body is, there the eagles will be gathered together. So one was taken and another was left, showing God's direct intervention with those that are called to go. Matthew 24 and verses 40 and 41 are the parallel account to this. Let's do turn to Matthew 24, but let's back up some verses and look at verse 15 through 20. Matthew 24 and verse 15. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand. Then let those that are in Judea flee into the mountains, and let him who is on the housetop not go down to take anything out of his house, but let him that is in the and let him who is in the field not go back to get his clothes. But woe to those who are pregnant and to those who are nursing babies in those days, and pray that your flight be not in the winter nor on the Sabbath. You remember in 1 Samuel 18 and 19 and 20 that David had to flee into the wilderness to flee from Saul. We just heard about Elijah and how he fled into the wilderness as he ran from Jezebel in 1 Kings 19. How will the basic necessities? Now, when we in the United States, especially in this beautiful section of the country over here, that we've got all kinds of trees and things, when you think of a wilderness, you think of being lost in a forest. But in the Middle East, there are no trees. You're not lost in any tree or among them or whatever. It's sand and more sand and more sand. And walking is extremely difficult and so forth. Very little water. Very little water. So how are we going to make it if that would be the place that God is going to take us, in the middle of a wilderness? Revelation 12 and verse 14 again, it says, but the woman was given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness to her place. Like it is a place, it's her place, it is a specific place that God has set aside, where she is nourished for a time, times, and half a time from the presence of the serpent. So she's going to be fed, she's going to be nourished, I think, both physically and spiritually. In Isaiah 33 and verse 14, it says, the sinners in Zion are afraid. Fearfulness has selected the hypocrites. Again, Zion refers to God's church. So the sinners in God's church are afraid. Fearfulness has seized those that are hypocrites. Who among us shall dwell with the devouring fire? And who among us shall dwell with everlasting burnings? Going to be a time of tremendous trouble and heat and problems. As the old saying goes, only an idiot would jump out of the frying pan to jump into the fire. And where the focal point of all of the woes that are going to face the earth is in the middle of the Middle East. And what if that is the place that God is going to take his people? Amazing. Verse 16. And he will dwell on high, and his place of defense shall be the fortress of rocks. Bread will be given him. What kind of bread? Manna? I don't know. And his water shall be sure. So in other words, food and drink is going to be provided for the people that are in the rock, or Selah, or Selah. Verse 17, those that are there, he said, your eyes shall see the king in his beauty, and they will see the land that is very far off, which I think is a reference to the coming of Jesus Christ and the millennial rule. Who will be in the place of safety? Certainly this is one of the most important questions, more than where or any of that. Who will be in the place of safety? We just read where the sinner in God's church are going to be fearful. The hypocrites are going to be seized with hypocrisies. And who among God's people would have the courage to be able to jump into the fire? Revelation 3 and verse 10. Revelation 3 and verse 10, because you have kept my command to persevere, I will also keep you from the hour of trial which shall come upon the whole world to test those who dwell on the earth. Just like Christ said, just like Isaiah brought out, that never before has there been a time of trial and test like this is going to be. And he says that it's going to be global, that it's going to test every nation. And I do not know of any time previously in mankind's existence where that has taken place. In Ezekiel, the 9th chapter, Ezekiel 9, as we read there in Revelation 3 and verse 10, I will keep you from the hour of trial. That God promises protection, that he promises to those that patiently keep his word. Ezekiel 9 and verses 4 through 6. And the Lord said unto him, go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and put a mark on the foreheads of the men who sigh and cry over the abominations that are done within it. And to the others, he said in my hearing, go after him through the city and kill him. Do not let your eye spare, nor have any pity. Utterly slay old and young men, maidens and little children and women, but do not come near anyone on whom is the mark, and begin at my sanctuary, at his church, at his people. So they began with the elders who were before the temple. So those that sigh and cry, those that have compassion, those that truly care and are concerned about what's going on in our world around us and concerned one for another, those that have the love of God are the ones that are going to receive this, quote, mark. In Luke 21 and verse 36, he said, Luke 21, 36, watch therefore and pray always that you may be counted worthy to escape all of these things that shall come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man. So we are to be watching. We are to be praying. Will all of the faithful escape? No. We talked about a little bit before the fifth seal, which is the martyrdom of saints. So obviously some of the saints are going to have to be around for that. In Revelation 12 and verses 15 through 17, it talks about how that he spewed out the flood again and tried to destroy those. And when he couldn't, notice verse 17, and the dragon was enraged with the woman, God's church, and he went to make war with the rest of her offspring. Interestingly enough, they keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. But something was wrong, and they were left behind. Is that the, quote, Laodicean church? To be attacked by Satan the devil. In Revelation 11 and verses 7 through 10, it talks about two witnesses. And finally, they're going to be slain and be in the streets of Jerusalem. Apparently, they're just going to hang them up like a side of beef or something for 3 days. And then they're going to be resurrected. In Matthew 25 and verses 1 through 12, We find the parable of the 10 virgins. Now, I think that parable is not referring to a physical place of safety, but it deals with the issue of salvation, not physical protection. But it's interesting that it says all 10 virgins, the foolish and the wise, all slumbered and slept and barely made it. We can take the example of the wedding supper and other biblical analogies that talk about not being dressed properly. And the implication is that the foolish virgin, much more seriously, is lacking not physical protection. That's important and that's fine. But they're lacking the spiritual protection and ultimately to be born in God's kingdom. So what is our ultimate goal? Is it physical protection or spiritual salvation? Revelation 2 and verses 8 through 11. Revelation 2 and verse 8 to the church at Smyrna. He said unto the angel of the church at Smyrna, these things saith the first and the last, who is dead and is come to life. I know your works, tribulation and poverty, but you are rich. And I know the blasphemy of those who say they are Jews, but are not. They claim to be Christians, but they're so far from it, it's sickening. But are of the synagogue of Satan. In verse 10, do not fear any of these things that you are about to suffer. Indeed, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison, that you may be tested, and you will have tribulation 10 days, or a short period of time. But be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life. He who has an ear to hear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches. He that overcomes shall not be hurt by the second death. And I think we can learn from all of the messages of the seven churches. But here at Smyrna, he says, be faithful unto death, that Satan is going to make it rough, that Satan is going to do his dead level best to get you out of the kingdom of God. In Matthew 6 and verse 33, you're very familiar with it, that we are to seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, then all of these other things fall into place. In Luke 9 and verse 23 through 26, Luke 9 and verse 23. Then he said unto them all, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. For whosoever desires to save his life will lose it. If that's our only purpose, is me, myself, and I, it's only selfish that we make it into God's kingdom or God's protection, just to spare some hurt and pain maybe. But whosoever loses his life for my sake will save it. For what profit is it to a man if he gains the whole world and himself is destroyed or lost? For whoever is ashamed of me and my words, of him the Son of Man will be ashamed when he comes in his own glory, and in his Father's and his holy angels. So are we trying to save our lives, or are we rather trying to lose our lives for God's sake, to serve and to give and help others? Wouldn't it be far better if you could help someone else to qualify for that protection, even rather than your own self? But you would qualify, but you have prayed so much for them that they can make it. Revelation 12 and verses 10 and 11. Revelation 12 and verse 10 and 11. We find that salvation is the most important thing. Then I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ have come. For the accuser of the brethren who accuses them before God day and night has been cast down. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and the word of their testimony, and they did not love their lives to death. So as we conclude today, I have attempted to go through who, what, why, where, when, and how about the place of safety. Some of the answers are not crystal clear. God has not been as definitive about protecting our physical bodies as he has about obtaining spiritual salvation and eventually being in the resurrection then to eternal life. But I do believe that the weight of scriptural evidence does point to a geographical location where God provides protection for most of his faithful servants at the end time. If the Bible reveals where the place is, it probably, possibly, might be Selah or Petra, the rock. There doesn't seem to be any strong evidence for any other location. I have speculated and I have thought that when it's time to go to a place of safety, I honestly think it's going to be the hardest trial that you have ever been through in your entire life. It's going to take a lot of faith. First of all, people are going to say, okay, how do you know that it's time to go? Who knows that it's time to go? I think if Mr. Armstrong were alive, a lot of people had faith and trust and confidence in him. Others did not, but a lot of people did. And if he said, now is the time, and here's where we're going, they would have gotten on the boat and they would have gone. But now, who is to say it's time to go? And who is to say where to go? I think it's going to be a big trial, because you might have to leave elderly parents. You might have to go off and leave unconverted mates or unconverted children. You're going to have to walk off and leave a house. You might even have to leave your dog. That's tough. I'm sure it's hard. You're going to think, well, what's he or she going to do? How are these kids going to make it? I think it's going to be a matter of the greatest trial of faith that you have ever been through in your life. How will you know? There is going to be a place. God promises safety. God promises protection. God promises that there will be a place of safety. From 1 Cowan 3 and verse 6, I think, and put it in that bin where it goes, you read Daniel, and he prophesied that Christ, Jesus, would have a 7-year ministry. And of course, he was cut off in the middle of the week, so he only had a 3.5-year ministry. He has 3.5 years left of his ministry. When will that take place? Will it be the first 3.5 years of the millennium? Possibly. Could it possibly be the 3.5 years that we are in a place of safety? That Jesus himself comes and teaches us? I guarantee you, if all these people are supposed to get together, it is going to take him. And it's going to take some humbling of hearts and of minds to be able to yield to him. But I have wondered and speculated and personally feel that 3.5 years will be fulfilled in the place of safety. That we have so much to learn. We have so much to grow in. That we are to become like Christ, that we are to become like the Father. And boy, I think that, man, he's there and we're way down there in the bottom of the Grand Canyon. And how are we going to accomplish that? I think it's going to be 3.5 years of intensive training and guidance and direction. I think most of us would agree that who is going to be there is the most important question to answer for ourselves and for our family. The most important thing of all, of course, is that we obtain God's kingdom, not just physical protection, even if we have to live through the horrible end time or maybe be martyred for the sake of the gospel of Christ. And hopefully those who are alive at the end age will be blessed and protected in a place of safety.